Blog Talk Radio.
Maybach music.
With the ghetto on my rear view.
Oh,
you are my every tomorrow.
Oh,
the world is ours. Major Blood.
I've been lying in my bed, crying till my eyes are red. We both said that things will change, but it's still the same shade of gray.
Monumental, licking on the ear, I'm whispering a couple riddles. She fell in love with my technique. I made her call me boss when in the bed sheet. We both coming from the same place. All in a boat coming at the same place. Still on my dope boy swag. Top down on my camera, oh boy swag. Played the hand we were dealt from the beginning, baby. Yeah, the dealer cut the deck while we winning, baby.
Alafia, greetings, Anhotep. And just like Mary J. Blige and the hip hopper singer says, why can't we get it right? We've been trying to get it right for centuries, ladies and gentlemen. We've been trying to get those relationship problems together. And we can do it with a little help from ourselves. We've been letting everybody else correct our problem. It's time that we took a stand and decided to use a little bit of our culture to resolve our problem. The main reason we can't get it right is that we are running towards everybody else's stuff except our own. Now, we're going to try to get it right this time as we talked about a redemption plan for the last 2 days. Now, if you have been redeemed, let the redeemed say so. If you're in the house and you've been redeemed and you're in the chat room, put your hands up. As a matter of fact, put both your hands up and let me know you've been redeemed. We were redeemed from the thick of things. We were redeemed in the womb. We have always been redeemed. We just start walking in that light. Now it's time for us to walk in that light. As we walk in that light, ladies and gentlemen, then we can begin to acknowledge the fact that we have a solution to our own relationship problem. We have no business letting people in our bedroom from other outside cultures trying to tell us how to get it right. We have no business over at the institution called the courthouse asking them to give us permission to become wedded. We must understand that when the master gave us permission to hitch up, that was all we need, and then we went in the backwoods, and we not only just jumped the broom, but we said a few vows, and we made some commitments. Now, a man's word is not his bond. He will promise the woman the world, and whether or not he fulfills that is a question or not. Now, I want to say this. We have been redeemed, so let's act like we've been redeemed. Let's function in the manner that we are headed towards reorganizing the marriage vows for the 21st century. And here to help us out, to make sure we're on the right path, I brought in one of my relationship warriors who's going to give us some pointers, especially you young heads out there. If you're out in the audience, I want you to come on in the chat room. Better yet, call in. Why don't you lock that dial in at 646-478-0270. Go ahead, little G, lock it in, because you're going to need to talk to this gentleman. He works with youth. He works with his own youth, his family members. He's been talking to them about how to get relationships right, how to acknowledge that you should be in a relationship. And the problem is, ladies and gentlemen, we don't realize that we should be in a relationship. And in the Bible, they even tell us that it's not good for men to be alone. So why are we trying to do all this stuff on our own? We need a helpmate. And it's a good thing for a man to find a wife. And right about now, we're going to go and take a station identification, and we're going to meet you right back in the air, and we're going to say hello to our guests before we go to station identification. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. Let me say hello to our guests. Mr. Holman, how are you?
I'm doing well.
That's great. Ladies and gentlemen, I have Mr. Eddie Holman on the line, a longtime international brother who has been involved in traveling around the world. So as I talked with him today, I knew he had something to bring to the table in his experience and his travel. I know he has some unique things to tell us, especially the youth, about their relationship. And if you just hold tight, Mr. Holman, we'll be right back at you in the atmosphere. We're going to go ahead and take care of some little housekeeping, and we'll be right back at you in the atmosphere. Hold tight. All right, ladies and gentlemen, and we're back. And ladies and gentlemen, I am going to introduce Eddie Holman to you and give you a little bit of background. I'm going to ask him to also come up and give us a little bit more background information about himself. I know he's a longtime friend of Jimmy Harvey's, who I met through Jimmy Harvey. And I know him to be an expert in many other fields and business as well. And I was really, really impressed to find out that he had an interest in the area of relationships. Now, I want to say this, Mr. Holman. We've been talking about how to do a redemption plan and how a man doesn't need a wife unless he has a plan. And if that man does not have a plan, he has no business seeking a wife. because why would you need a helpmate if you didn't have any plan to carry out? So I'm going to get your opinion on that and kind of fill you in a little bit. We've done a redemption plan for the man, and we've also done a redemption plan for the woman. We've talked a little bit about things we need to change in our lives, but we also want to acknowledge the fact that we have a culture, and because our culture necessitates that our religion is stemmed from our culture, and so are our relationships. And why are we doing everything by the book when it comes to the Bible and church, but we are neglecting and negating the fact that we need to draw all of our direction for our relationships out of our culture? So that's one of the things we've been trying to do in here, is have rituals and culture and talk about the fact that marriage was created to stabilize and continue the way of our forefathers and also our lifestyle. Not necessarily because we're so in love with one another. It was created for the fact that it will substantiate appropriation and creating life so that we will have namesakes left behind. So it's very important that we understand that this is not all about I'm fly, she's fly, we need to be together, and then next week you don't love each other anymore. It's about a union. A union is supposed to be stable. And whether or not you love each other or not, it's supposed to be adhered to because it's a contract. And we're going to get Mr. Holman's opinion on that. And before we do that, we'd like for everyone to stand to their feet. As you know, in this room, we always acknowledge our ancestors because without them, we have no backs to stand on. So I'm going to ask you to stand to your feet, ladies and gentlemen, because you are in the presence of your ancestors. They are here, and they have always been summoned. So I like to acknowledge my mother and my father and light a candle so that they can find their way back here to our room. I pour libation for my father, and I say, Ashe. I pour libations for my mother's spirit, and I say, Ashe. I light a candle for my mother so that she might find her way back here. Out of the middle passage, out of the rubbish, out of the ocean, I light a candle that mother may find her way back to us to reconnect to the greater family. I light a candle to my father's spirit that he may find his way back also and that he may take his appropriate seat at the head of the family. I light a candle to my father. I pour libations to the east and I say, Ashe. I pour libations to the west, and I say, Ashe. I pour libations to the north, and I say, Ashe. And finally, I pour libations to the south, and I say, Ashe. I like to offer up a decree for the family. I like to offer up an affirmation that every family represented here today will be able to write their own redemption plan. I decree that every family will be conscious of the fact that we are Africans. The question here today is to be or not to be Africans. And as we acknowledge who we are, we will know ourselves. And as we find out who we are and the greatness that we came from, it will be a lot easier for us to live with ourselves. I light a candle that each one of those family members who have not been reconnected, that they will be reconnected back to their higher self. And we acknowledge God today and give God all the glory. We know that the Africans believe that we come from greatness, and we believe that there is the opportunity for us to reconnect to our ancestors. So we ask God to allow us to assemble ourselves with our deceased loved ones as they come back to assist us and we stand on their shoulders. I'd like to thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Now I'm going to bring Mr. Holman on to give you a little background about himself and his travel and the things he's been doing and where he's been at in his lifestyle with relationship. Now let me also acknowledge the other caller out in the room and say hello. Hello, caller number two, hello.
Hello?
Oh, okay, hello, how are you?
I'm pretty good.
That's good. Who am I speaking to?
You're speaking to Sam.
Okay, Sam. How are you, Sam? Where are you calling from?
In Washington.
Okay, Sam. Thank you so much for calling us and joining us. Have you been following us in the last 2 days?
Yes, I have. I just have a few
questions. Oh, I'm glad.
And just
so
need
have
to
you
talk
been
about
have
it.
You been learning about the redemption plan?
Yes. I just,
all right then. Is there anything you would like to say to the audience, or any attribute that you would like to give us today?
Do you take any confessions?
Pardon me?
Do you take any confessions?
No, I don't take any confessions. I can't bless you now and give you 10 Hail Marys and excuse you for any sins or anything, but I can say right now, you know, I'm sure that the Almighty will forgive you of your sins if you confess your sins quietly within your own heart.
Okay,
all right.
Well,
thank you so much, Sam. And Sam, I have a guest here in the room, and I'd like to introduce him, and we're going to bring him on. Mr. Holman, you have the atmosphere, and we would like for you just to give us a little bit about your travel, your experience, and your experience in relationships, and what do you foresee for the future for the Africans relationship?
Well, I would first like to say I apologize for Sam. I think he he enlightened us that just as yesterday, the battle continues. My background is rather international. I've traveled all the continents of the world. I'm on my third passport. Extensively traveled throughout Africa. Was in South Africa many times before Mandela was released. Have seen dictators throughout the African continent come and go. Have had commercial business relationships with some, and basically learned that contrary to Sam's belief, more similar with Malcolm's belief, I don't view Africa as a color. I view it as a continent of many cultures, many races, many people, many tribes, and that because of that and its history, its colonialistic history, a continent where relationships have been under a chaotic umbrella for many years, many centuries. I would like to say that not only have I traveled to Africa, I've traveled throughout Asia, the Americas, North and South, and also Europe. So I have a wide experience with different cultures and how those cultures impact upon relationships. One thing that I am rather proud of you mentioning is that that it's not good for men to be alone. I think that is one thing that we really need to focus in on, because we now have a underclass of young African-American males in the United States who happen to be very alone, both from the standpoint of not having stable long-term relationships, but also neither having sort of role model relationships to build on. So that's sort of my background. I think that we continually have to understand the impact of the last 500 years of colonialism and migration and matriarchal relationships being the strength of our community as realities, and not shy away from them and understand that they have sort of dictated the rules in our, you know, relationship contracts between husbands and wives and men and women. And I think once we recognize that legacy, that 500-year legacy and its impact upon how we view relationships, I think it'll give us a better opportunity to move forward in a positive way. I am happily married for in excess of 20 years. I am an advocate to all of my sons to be married. I have five sons, one recently married a couple of years. I have another one with an impending marriage in 2012. And just today I was speaking with a nurse who cares for a family member, and I was trying to get her married off to my third son. So I'm a huge advocate for the matrimonial contract, and again, to sort of combat that living alone image of the young African-American male in the United States.
Well, something you said, Mr. Holman, that really, really sparked some interest in reference to those role models and the African-American male not having very many married role models. And I saw that as being a very, very prominent problem for our African-American males when they have to demonstrate who do they look towards if they're not in the community and not in the churches. And I found that it's very necessary for us to create and develop a family life center, that one that will focus in on customs and tradition. I know that there is a Native American or Mideasterners culture center here, but nothing in our area in reference to an African-American center. We take it for granted that we always have known about our customs and traditions, but we will find that we know less and less about our customs and tradition as African-American, and maybe someone from other cultures may even know more about our custom. Our family share a Native American and an African American custom, and we had some of them to live long enough to be 100 years old to tell us about our traditions and customs. And one of the things that we always were told is that it was very, very important that you have a Saturday school, one that would demonstrate the culture, because in the regular traditional school, you will not get the training in culture. And you notice that the Jews, the Jewish people always had a customary school on Saturday, and so did the Turkish people, to teach the young people their customs and their heritage. And I found that we need a life center. So I have developed a model virtuous life center online that actually focus in on looking at engagement ceremonies for the young people done in an African style. And we have to always remind them that we have to know what's ours and what belonged to us. And as soon as we see the ceremony with the jumping broom, we immediately say, oh, that's our stuff. But in reality, it's the Westerner's concept. It's not an African concept. So I have employed the African Americans to make sure that they reconnect to their tribes and get their DNAs done to find out what tribe they came from, primarily to see exactly where your continent, where you came from, what's significant about your tribe. So we're into a lot of tribal issues here, which can also cause for a lot of tribal conflicts in the families and the life. So we're finding that as the Africans become more conscious, they're realizing that they're living a Eurocentric lifestyle. And I know this because I lived in the suburb practically all my life and realized I wasn't living the good life and that I was being devoid of self. And not to know self is really a hideous crime, because when you don't have a knowledge of self, you're doomed to repeat the errors of our forefathers. So it's so important that we should have a family life center that will focus in on our African customs. And I wanted to know your opinion on that.
Well, I think it's important always to have places where you can gather. And let me see. I don't think it's important to gather all the time without conflict. I think conflict and chaos are viable and very valuable emotions. And in those types of environments, you can, you know, learn to disagree and then even learn something about another opinion. But I do think it's very, very important always to have nodes or areas where you can come together and exchange ideas, review histories, share histories and cultural things of importance. One thing that I always caution people on is to understand what the origin of conflict and chaos is. Is it by design or is it just happenstance? You know, is it indigenous or is it, genetic? Because conflict, like love, is a, it's an emotion that, you see in infancy without any, environmental influences. I think always to have a place where you can go and understand each other is eminently important. But I would say I don't necessarily think it has to be free of conflict.
I agree with you on that conflict issue. We have to learn how to, within the perimeters of working with diversity, we have to learn how to minimize conflict. And for some reason or other, we as a people have not learned how to diversify and minimize conflict. Most of the time when we feel we have nothing to bring to the table, there lies where you see the majority of the conflicts, because we feel somebody is, instead of integrating, we feel that someone might be taking over. And that's why it's a very good idea to know what traditions and customs you have to bring to the table. And when you're not aware of that, you become intimidated. And I found that the main thing that we are lacking is a presence in the church of who we are and how to reconnect ourselves back to Egypt, and knowing that Egypt has not been taken out of Africa and put in the Middle East, and understand that we are those people, the Nubian people, the burnt-skinned people, and because we are those people, we share in their greatness and what they actually have done over the years. And it's very inevitable if we don't teach our young people that that is the greatness that they came from, they will never know that Imhotep, the multi-genius who embarked upon medicine and embarked upon creating the Stair-Step Pyramid, that his name was once Aesculapius, but then they changed it to Imhotep. So when you find that these are actual leaders in our community and our culture, and they've been changed and altered, then a young African male might say, well, we have nothing that we can be proud of, and not knowing their stuff. So I find it very important as a history teacher to go beyond just the civil rights movement and dealing with the march on Washington, to go beyond that, to go to the dynasty days and say, listen, you've had ancestors that sit in duality, male and female, and who ruled for millions of years, and their relationships were intact. So here lies where I would prefer to go to show relationship, because they were intact, and the woman ruled simultaneously beside the man. So I find that if we can take them to that level, then they can see the Hatshepsut, then they can see the Queen Nzinga, and the status that they carried in those ancient days, and knowing that that's our history and we are not devoid or separated from that. And then they begin to say, well, I didn't know that that was us. And a lot of people didn't know that that was us, and they have given claim to Cleopatra, and that was when the various different change of hands was coming in. But primarily our young people are not astute to history. They have actually decided to walk away from history when you talk about slavery. They don't want to hear that. They want to hear something else. So I was contracted in Illinois to come in and teach ancient history and not slavery. And when you get a young people that all they know is slavery, it's a lot of hurt when you go back and have to revisit those areas of hurt. And we know that those marriages were torn apart. No one adhered to the marriages. The slave master didn't care that you married Buck yesterday. He's sending Buck down the road to another plantation to breed with another woman. They had no respect for our marriages. So we've got to look at the fact and say, we must take the initiative to create and to reinvent and to take the best of our rubbish and try to save it and salvage it and recreate it. So as a marriage consultant and my profession undergraduate in marriage and family life, I've taken the decision to write a handbook, one that will be conducive for the family as well as child development, because it does me no good to talk about child development when I don't talk about the child at the center of the family, understanding how significant every role model in the family is and how marriage is a customary thing that every young woman has the right to, because it preserves our culture, not because they want to be in love. It also allows for appropriation for the children to continue to grow and so that we don't become extinct.
I think that's I think that's the critical point. I differ somewhat on the cultural significance of origin. And the only reason I say that is because, you can travel to South America and the Mayans or the Aztecs will tell you the origin of the world is there. And they have as much evidence as the Egyptians to sort of, make you wonder. You look at the Amazonian image of the Amazonian woman and her dominance, of a vast amount of geography. I look at it from the standpoint of I think we have to respect that. I think you mentioned in history, historically speaking, we have the human race has been a very vicious and violent species. And in that, one of the things that is stable throughout it is the union between male and female throughout history, throughout geography, throughout conflict, throughout cultures. The procreation part of it, I don't think is necessarily unique for any one culture or the other than the fact that geographically now you can go to many places. Japan comes to mind where they are...
Mr. Holman, now the appropriation part I find very, very necessary, because do you not know that the African American is on the list to become a bald eagle? They have now replaced the bald eagle with the African American coming up to become extinct, meaning that the average young man won't live beyond 25, so they're going to become extinct if we don't do something about it.
No, that was my point. I was about to say that, you look at the Japanese and they are about to become extinct because they're down to, less than one, 0.0 children. They're like at 0.8 children per family. That their culture will die if they continue at that rate. You travel to Singapore and, if you're under 25 in Singapore, you get as a male, you get a stipend to go out and date women because, most of the women there are...
And the same thing with Europe. Same thing with Europe. When I lived there, they got a stipend to have children. The more children they had, they got stipends.
So my point is, I think throughout history and throughout cultures, when I say procreation...
But Mr. Holman, let's zone back into that. I don't want to miss that point. I want the people to hear that. You got a good point. Now, the stipends are going out to the various different diverse cultures, but the African-American youth are being penalized for having the babies, but yet they're keeping our numbers alive. How do you feel about that?
Well, again, when you say penalized, I think the penalty is internal. I don't necessarily accept the penalty being external. The penalty is in having the child and running away from the child. I think that's the penalty.
I would say the penalty would be that you're given a false sense of hope when you've been given welfare and then all of a sudden it's taken away from you. In Europe, that doesn't happen. Those young people are given stipends. I saw them receive stipends, and they literally said, "We're given stipends." And our young people are given a false sense of hope with a safety net pulled from under them. So there is a negative. We're given more I guess you would say, these Planned Parenthoods are being propped up all over our community for us to eliminate our seed, saying that we would prefer you go in and have a surgery to have your uterus taken out. It is a big ploy under the Mississippi appendectomy, where large sums of African American women were having their actual uterus completely removed for no reason other than the fact that maybe we can stop this person from appropriating. And it's been a known fact that this has been happening.
Yeah, but I think that, again, is, you know, and I think, you know, you're very astute on this. It's a historical lesson. It's, you know, Europe, the continent of Europe has been savaged by wars and mass killings for the last, you know, three centuries. I mean, that's where most of the death has occurred. And I think because of that, they've adopted a social welfare plan to replenish the masses that have been lost because of conflict. I think here
Hold it. Now you cry for the Holocaust over in Europe, but what about our Maafa in the Middle Passage?
Well, again,
Can you address the Maafa? The first Holocaust people that were killed, and I was right there in Germany when they pulled the statistics, they were not Jewish people. They were black people. See, we've got to get our facts together, because we're dying all over the country, and we're dying right here in America. And our Holocaust is just like the Jewish Holocaust, but greater. Our Maafa is a far greater catastrophe, tragedy, than anybody on this earth. But yet we cry for the Jewish people.
Well, I don't necessarily say, you know, I cry for all oppression and all, unfair. I mean, I look at the Native American, and I'd say I think their Holocaust rivals any Holocaust. I look at when you look at the continent of Africa and the indigenous people that still remain there, and then you look at the continent of North America and South America and the amount of indigenous people who remain, I think, you know, I would beg to differ about, you know.
What I'm saying. We've got a mass genocide on the African Americans. A mass genocide, and it's a mass genocide on the Africans too, and we cannot put our finger on it for looking at the other countries and saying that they are having war too. But there is war on the African, and nobody's reporting that war. Would you not say that the average black man is being waged war against? The average black man is 90% locked up in prison. And if that's not a wage war, I don't know what is, because the Jewish people go to the prisons and they unite their young ladies with the men there and they marry them because they know that they have a covering on their head. And see, we look at it as shame because those men are ostracized. We don't look at it as we need to reunite those men back to the community. We need to marry our children to those men. We don't look at that. We look at it as if those men will never be rehabilitated and won't come back into the camp. But we've got to start looking at what catastrophes that are happening to our own African-American communities, because we have seen the siege upon Americans all over the world. And I've lived in Europe for 5 years, and I saw the catastrophe on the Africans who came from Germany and had to become refugees right there in Europe. And because they were refugees, they were less than a second-class citizen. So we've got some work to do when it comes to looking at how do we preserve our youth, because they're dying, and it's not all at their own hand. A lot of it is the fact that we've got a regulation that says that they have to reduce the world by 3 million people. So if they have to reduce that count, then they're doing something about it to reduce that count. But at the same time, who are they reducing? Imbeciles and people of less value that have no more use on this earth. So once again, let's get back to our topic. We're talking about relationships. We're talking about unions. And we're talking, now who cares about if we have a union if they didn't care about the institution of marriage for Africans? No one. And that's why we got to take a turn and say we're taking control of our own institution. We're setting the pace for our own institution. We're going to look at monogamous situations. We're going to look at polygamy because a black woman created. We're going to see how it best benefits her so that she has a name that she can cover her head with. We're going to look at how we can reinvent this whole process of monogamy and understand that women have to create a situation where they have a man in their household, not necessarily a man that may be there 5 days a week, but if we're going to have a 5-to-1 ratio, 7-to-1 ratio, which the Bible projects, and it's already there now. Now we're getting same-sex marriage, and then we can't even get it together as African-American whether or not we want to marry somebody that's of African descent. And we've got to understand if we don't set a precedence for how we're going to institutionalize this thing called marriage, then somebody's going to set precedence for us.
No, and I will agree with you in that regard that we need to set our own ground rules because the institution of marriage in our community is definitely dying. But what I would say is I wouldn't necessarily look at it from strictly a matriarchal view. The 7-to-1 ratio by design or by mathematics, it leads you down a very slippery slope. You know, I mean, if you say, how do we address this issue? If monogamous relationships is the ground rule. So what I would say is that, you know, I think we need to understand that some of these things are not necessarily just happenstance. They're by design. And that's when I say that we as a people need to understand historically, no matter the onslaught or the chaos or the conflict, no matter the culture or the race or the geography, that one thing always holds true, and it is that there are males and females that bind together as units, that structure their lifestyle to enhance a future. And I think that's where we're losing it. We're not structuring our lifestyles.
And wouldn't you also say, I'm going to call you Professor, when you also say that we have got to take a look at our economic status and know that statistics shows that couples are grossing far more money and they have more voting power and more rights when it comes to political issues. So therefore, we've got to look at marriage and in a different light in and of the fact that it is an economic status, an economic standpoint that will allow us to recirculate monies in our own community. And I had formalized a program to look at it from an economic standpoint and say if you had 5 or 6 tribal couples in your group who had like minds and like education like your own, then you could very well begin to stockpile monies where you could be an institution to be reckoned with. So my whole purpose of coming up with the tribal plan is to create an economic presence in the community so that young people can see that there's strength in numbers. And with these tribal couples, it would lend for those women to be cohabitating, having appropriation, while other women were being circulated out in the workforce. So while some were at home managing the home, the other ones could be out circulating the economic status and going out into the courtyard to pursue property and to develop themselves. While at the same time, this is a concept of a lot of the Hispanics and a lot of the natives where they lived together and cohabitated. And when they lived together, it meant it brought for a better economic status. So I'm looking at it from an economic standpoint. How do we strengthen our economic dollar? And if we are going to continue to get these degrees that are far surpassing the economic amount that we can gain from the employment, and now we're strung out on a $30,000 student loan, and we can't even foresee obtaining a job making minimum wages. So somewhere along the line, you're going to have all of these young people with the misunderstanding that I